I'd like to go first. So it's currently Youth Day in South Africa, which came out of a very painful place in apartheid. And, it's usually a day we focus on youth and, everyone's launching their youth programs or doing a youth outreach. And so I'm very mindful of youth because of today, that the day we celebrate in South Africa, but also just the, like you say, the future of the youth. And where I find myself is having worked with youth, currently working in youth development, having gone through kind of the schooling system in South Africa, and researching a little bit more about, how do we close gaps, why are gaps created, and considering our contextualized issue around apartheid and the degradation or, the breakdown of our education system here, it really takes me back to, the laying the right foundation for education. And so that's why my research has actually taken me back into the sense of actually we need to look at building those foundation years quite early along, as the research does show that, those early foundation years do set you up for life. So it either sets you up for success or for failure in your academic and professional career. So for me, youth education is important. And, in South Africa, we do kind of term youth, loosely, and have the youth age range, where we have a youth category that takes youth up until 35-ish, we'd like to say. So it's quite interesting to see how, the world views youth and what they term as youth and what they categorize as youth and education. So yeah, that's me.
Oh, wow. I think that's super interesting, especially the part with the how you categorize youth up until 35. I'm still in the youth group. Yes.
Yeah,
That's
that's why I
interesting.
added the ish, Nadja.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, but I completely agree that it has to go, somewhere from the start, and that's what we see a lot of times. Like, still, when I think, I left like 12th grade in 2007, and then I always thought, as the time goes by and we go more into the future, then the education is going to change and it's going to be easier for the upcoming generations to find their path and so on. And that is why I'm thinking more and more that it's really important to have, if we have tools like futures thinking, to have those actually, from a younger age. Because a lot of the times, like for instance, there's this moment for students, for younger people, like they're 15 or 16, and then they have to decide, like, okay, how do I go on from here? Like, do I go into like gymnasium, or do I go get like vocational education, or something like that? And then a lot of the times, what statistics show and research, and just like by asking around, is that those children really have no clue oftentimes where to go and what to do. So they're basically at the same point like older generations as well. So it's kind of like some people know, but some people really rely on just what the society says, or like just pure luck. And I feel like it could be changed to something way better, especially because we have all these tools and opportunities and methodologies that we can use to help the youth. And then I'm like, imagine how that future would look like if we would have like this really like thought through process of helping the youth, like as in teachers who are in the system, as in parents also being able to help their children, etc. So yeah.
All right, awesome. So from my standpoint about youth education, I used to be a tutor, a high school tutor for AVID. I'm not sure if you guys heard of this AVID program. So this is a college preparatory system where they help students to achieve certain skills for in preparation for college. So I was just there to facilitate, help encourage these students to ask questions, to collaborate, to communicate, and to work on their creative thinking skills and questions. But one of the things that I really liked was the inclusion of someone from college like myself into these classrooms, where I can tell them a certain things that they might be, using, like what are the skills they're learning and showing them the kind of applications that's going to be happening in college, whether there's a lot of note-taking, a lot of hand-raising, a lot of talking, a lot of presentation. So the things that we do in those small groups in high school is something that I really encourage them to, you know, foresee, you know, farther into their education, if it's something that they really enjoy or something that can that they can prepare for. So I really do like programs in high schools where they encourage students to learn other than just basics topics and subjects. So I think that's something that I enjoy seeing, you know, in youth education. Yeah. Alexandra, I think you were having some trouble.
Yeah, sorry, I got kicked out or something. I disappeared and then I kept trying to rejoin. I think I had one of the bad links, but I'm so sorry. It worked out though.
No worries.
Just commenting on what you just said, Victor, about, you know, studying something other than the basics. Something I've been very curious about as a futurist is the concept of unschooling. I'm not sure if everyone here is familiar with that term, unschooling, but it has to do with, it's sort of a form of homeschooling, or it tends to blend into the homeschooling world. I saw Dhruv, sorry if I got the name wrong, just put up a little emoji. Thank you. yeah, unschooling is really interesting. It's something that I think has the potential to really grow in the future, particularly the post-pandemic future. And what it is basically is like an approach, you know, that lets kids form their own curriculum, for lack of a better word. It's not very, it's not standardized. It's not very predetermined. It lets kids sort of follow their passions, follow their interests, develop their own ideas and research them and learn to talk about them. So I think it's a really cool idea, not just because of the homeschooling experiment that resulted from the COVID lockdowns and all of that, which has made remote learning and online learning a much more feasible option, I think, for a lot of people. But there's also the concurrent trend of information technology, where so much of the information that we used to memorize and learn in school, right, that we had to use reference materials to look up or calculate, or, you know, use tools to calculate or whatever, is such a given now. You know, just on a kid's smartphone, they can get so much information. Now they have access to so much more. So it makes sense to me that the trends are kind of pointing towards schooling that is flexible, personalized, and much more around what interests you. I think the basics, the concept of the basics is sort of perhaps, you know, in danger of going extinct. I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's super interesting. I think, like, especially right now, like, I am in Estonia, and here, because of the pandemic, for instance, of course, all of the children were at home. And then at some point, what happened was that actually, when they were allowed to go to school again, a lot of the children didn't want to anymore, because they were doing actually way better, learning from home, managing their own time, spending more time on doing what they like and learning the way they like it, instead of going to school and spending all those hours at a class, at a desk, doing something that was like how and when they were told to do it. So this flexibility, actually, that a lot of students got better grades and actually were doing way better because they could manage it themselves.
Yeah, I agree. So something, you know, South Africa is also trying to shift to, as you say, like the unschooling, you know, unlearning how we used to learn versus like inquiry or discovery through, you know, following your curiosities, often not encouraged in the typical schooling system. Even in the homeschool cottage setting, it's still very kind of rigid here. And only recently, some of the schools, like you say, due to COVID, have been, you know, redesigning the pedagogical approach in how, you know, education is now more kind of child-directed or interest-driven. And we still have a long way to go, because even in, if you think about it, in education training, so like your teachers being trained or your, you know, facilitators and coaches, there's still a lot of like silo work and not interdisciplinary kind of curriculum alignment. So even, you know, as I said, like with South Africa's history, even our national curriculum can be quite challenging for you know, even the private and the public sector of how they see that outworking itself through, you know, learning or teaching and learning. So I'm really excited to see what, as much as everyone's saying, you know, COVID has been such a wreck and caused havoc on systems, what the redesigning of education might look like because of it.
Yeah, I just think it's a, you know, another one of those things that is not going to be the same after COVID education, because there are mixed results. Like Nadia said, where she is, they've had very positive online learning results. Whereas in the US, it's been a really big flop for some kids. It's been really detrimental to their learning. And it's really exacerbated like social inequalities. You know, it really made them evident. You know, it opened it up to where we could see, okay, these certain kids are just, everything is inadequate. It's not just one thing. There's just a whole series of problems with, you know, certain groups of kids who are living in such dire circumstances. You know, we have so much economic inequality here. So it really just made that very, very evident in the US. But I have heard how, you know, in other countries, particularly like in Europe, it's been quite successful. And a lot of people are saying, why don't we keep it on? Why don't we keep doing it? So maybe it's just that there's a more hybrid transition stage that we're going through. But I think by and large, you know, post-COVID, people see now, and there's been some studies on this, you know, that the public opinion of online education is shifting to be more positive. Even though there are a lot of mixed results, by and large, it's sort of like more acceptable. It's more feasible. It's a possible future. And whereas previously it was kind of like not certain, even though we've been talking about online education for like, what, 30 years? It's been a thing. I mean, it's just now it seems like a real tipping point.
Also, yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Dhruv. I would like to, Victor, I don't know if you remember me. I was there in one of your earlier spaces talks. Yeah, hi. So I'm a teacher at the undergraduate level and I teach in India. So like the case I would like to present is that, you know, particularly like I would align with what Alexandra, if I'm pronouncing your name right, yeah. What you said that, you know, the social inequalities amongst the student group, like we have many students who are on scholarships and they're in the residential program in the university where they have their own spaces and everything. But once they were home, so we realized that sometimes the home environment itself is quite detrimental to the whole attitude of learning at home. So we had a feedback where many students wanted to come back to campus and we had to sort of, you know, have some sort of vaccination drive happen. And we had to come back to the physical mode for some of them because in I think, a design-centric education, it needs to be more aligned with the individual way of learning rather than a standardized way for all. So I think, yeah, in India also, we did face a lot of conflict in this online learning mode, if you would like to call it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I just also want to jump on what Dhruv and Alexandra were talking about, the inequalities, because in South Africa, you know, we are a developing country classified as third world, and as I mentioned, around the disparities in our education system is really rife because of what happened in our past. And, you know, even when we went remote, there were a lot of schools that could not do that. One, the schools are ill-equipped. And two, as Dhruv says, when students are coming from all over to a specific school, the home circumstances really look different for each and every learner and student. And that's why we found that, you know, a hybrid system could work, but it really depends on our context here. And South Africa really has a long way to go in terms of how we equalize, you know, the playing field in education, just because of disparities in infrastructure, even within our specific provinces or districts, it's really, you know, a vast difference between schools, between learners, even between educators. So we are excited about, like I said, the possibility of doing a hybrid system and bringing in, you know, future skills that are more human-centric. As Dhruv said, yeah, around, you know, how do we create a system that takes into consideration people, places, and processes. So it's exciting that we can be here and have those discussions and even just connect as, you know, people in the education space, futurists, design thinkers, and just people trying to make an impact in education, and particularly Victor around, you know, working with the youth. And because even me as a professional working with professionals, you really see like, oh, these are the current people leading. How much more so do we have to start from the bottom, from foundation years on skills that and jobs that are yet to be, you know, created?
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things that I had in mind when I was creating using Foresight was actually creating workshops for high school students, but not just introducing how to think about the future or how to teach them, you know, specific future skills, but more of bringing the idea, the concept of what are some jobs, what are some school majors that they might not, you know, realize that they exist. Or such as my job, right now I'm working with self-driving cars, but I'm not from any engineering background or any math background or anything technical skills, but I'm someone that still is involved with the self-driving cars. And that's something that I want to bring the idea, you know, the creativity, the hope, or just the inspiration for these students. Like, these are the jobs that exist now that they might not exist, that they didn't know that it existed. Or just bring the inspiration that there's a lot of other jobs and companies out there that can exist, and they will exist, or they might exist if they go into this route of what they want, you know, for themselves. You know, if they choose what they want to do, they're thinking by the time that they graduate from college or any other technical skills school, that can happen. You know, a lot of things can happen, you know, in 5 years.
I agree to that. I think that's super interesting and important, actually, to have that you would be actively thinking in high school, because, like, one way or another, we all have to start some kind of jobs. Like, there are not many people who are going to be like going through education and then never working. So I think it would be nice to actually have everywhere, like in our educational system, that students would have the possibility to really explore that area and to understand deeply. Like, I remember from when I started the path of, okay, I'm going to go to the university, I had no clue what to do. I was like, okay, this interests me, that interests me. And I know that in a lot of other countries, and there are like these coaches, and that somebody will help you, or like, you know, these like career coaches that will be like, okay, what are you interested in, and help them. But I don't think that it's as widespread. And I think that would be really, like, it would change a lot in our whole society if we would have more people who are really prepared and thinking about their future in advance.
Sorry, I dropped off again, but I thought I would just chime in to say that I've actually been teaching undergraduate courses in future studies for, you know, quite some time now. And I've worked with students pretty closely on research, you know, teaching them how to research the future and communicate their findings. And it's been interesting to me to see kind of a shift between millennials and Gen Z, because my current students are, of course, sort of Gen Z age group. And I've got to say, they have a much more negative opinion of the future than the sort of older, or I guess I should say younger millennials that I had previously been working with. And one of the things that strikes me is that they really question the idea that we have a future, and it's scary. I mean, a lot of these younger kids I work, you know, mine are like 19, 20 years old a lot of the time. And they're like, I'm not so sure the planet's going to be here in 100 years. you know, and it's the first time I've, you know, this is recent. So like with my Gen Zs, you know, it's probably the last couple of years, and these last couple of years, it's been sort of a shock to hear this really pessimistic viewpoint that it's kind of like, you know, not taken. It's like they don't take it for granted that the planet can keep going another 100, 200 years.
That is bizarre. I'm actually a 1997 person, so I'm like at the end of millennial and at the beginning of Gen Z. So I'm like, I'm still unsure which one I define the most to, but it's always funny asking friends, like, where do I belong? Which one am I? And I do understand how I get the point where a lot of my friends are pessimistic, negative Nancy's and all, and I do understand that point, but I also do enjoy the positive aspect of everything in life. You know, I just want to be that positive person. But in my collegiate course, in my undergrad, at the School for the Future of Innovation and Society, I've learned that I should be more of a neutral person. I need to be in the middle, understand both negative and positive perspectives from people from all over the world. And so that's the kind of line, the kind of lane that I'm on. So it's interesting to see how people, you know, from different backgrounds, from different parts of the world think about, you know, the world in different ways. So Nadia, Marisa, what's one thing that you kind of wish you had in high school or earlier?
Ooh. Well, first thing that I will want to say is, like, I don't know, like, when I was still in high school, we didn't, like, it was not, like, how do I put it? Like, internet was not used the same way, and you still didn't have, like, this kind of, like, that you can learn anything if you would want to, and I wish I had that, but I think it has to do something with the time, and something with that there was this educational system, and you're in it, and you just go through it as you're supposed to go. But I think the one thing that I really saw a difference back then, and I really see it right now when my friends are, some of them have become teachers. What I saw, which was really different, like, we had this one teacher who was teaching us biology, and she was very young. I think she was like 27 or 28 or something like that. And this whole vibe that she brought, you know, we were like watching all kinds of videos of like birth giving and all kinds of things like that. And we were all super comfortable with it and like okay. And like the kind of like environment that she created really made me interested in all of the topics that she was teaching. Even though I was not really, I was like more of the person who likes arts and literature and languages. And there I was sitting in biology class and I was like, wow, everything this human being is saying is so fascinating. And I wish I had more of that. I wish I had more of the people who are in the system, you know, more of teachers who would inspire and make you actually excited about the topics that they're teaching. Because that made it way easier to learn than rather just going through it and being like, okay, I have to learn it, and that's that. And you know, and we still, at least in this part of Europe and you know, the post-Soviet countries, there's still a lot of, you know, this old school teaching of like the teacher is the authority and you have to listen, and if you don't listen, I'm gonna yell at you or punish you or like this type of thing, like not exactly the same as it used to be, but it feels very, I think that we could have a completely different approach and we would have more curious young people growing up.
Yeah, I love that, Nadia. Yeah, so to jump on your curious note there, I think that's what I wish I had, that we were allowed to ask more questions. We were allowed to do more like unlearning and relearning and reframing. And similar to Nadia, I think my last 2 years, we had the same educator, and she was a teacher by profession, but she was more kind of a creative writer, author, who really shared her love for her work and got us to engage with content, with the topic. We were allowed to, you know, debate and challenge the teaching, and she would, you know, agree with us and say, you know, I don't know why we're learning these things. What would we be learning if you could choose? So I think that's something that I wish I had the ability to kind of, you know, follow my own curiosity. Similar to Nadia, around also the tech and the devices and innovation around using computers and the internet for exploration rather than, you know, just go and research one thing, find the information or type it out, instead of, you know, exploring the possibilities through the use of the internet. And yeah, I definitely also wish we had more, you know, the way that the classroom was structured or the learning was structured, that it was more, you know, where it was open spaces, where learning was facilitated and not kind of didactic taught. Because I currently use those systems of, you know, there's no front of the classroom, you know, anyone can speak when they want to, opening the space to conversation and dialogue and, you know, rigor of how we unpack certain terms, how we create shared understanding. And that's what I wish I had. And it might have shifted kind of my career. And I would have gotten to this place sooner, I think, rather than taking the long road around.
Same. I completely agree with that, with the long road around. And yeah, and the thing is that there are already really nice and good examples in, like, let's say, Finnish educational system, where they're completely shifting it and saying, you know what, we don't have this ordinary classroom. We are going to go outside and explore. We're going to learn about history and architecture. We're going to go outside and look at the buildings. You know, if we're going to, you know, learn physics, we're going to do experiments and really understand, you know, what's behind it and how we can learn it. And yeah, that everybody can ask questions, because I think still a lot of the students, you know, because there's this teacher student difference, they're even afraid to ask questions because they're like, I'm going to sound stupid, or like, maybe this teacher is going to yell at me or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's how I was in high school. I was that quiet kid. I was afraid of asking questions. I didn't want to raise my hand. I just tried to do my best to understand the concept, whatever they're trying to teach, and just learn that and nothing else. I didn't want to expand my mindset to any other opportunities or any other ideas that was brought, you know, upon this kind of subject, or if it's a topic in history, like what even for me to dive even deeper, to explore it even further. I just decided just to go with whatever they teach me, and that's it. And I think that's still something that, as you mentioned, the fear of asking questions, the fear of going even further. And I think that's kind of what might be holding people back from thinking, from using their creativity, you know, side of their brain. And I think that's something that's, you know, relevant in futures thinking, you know, have that open mindset of all the kind of opportunities, all the kind of creativities, possibilities. I think that's where it starts, you know, asking questions, thinking about anything that can happen, like anything is possible when it comes to, you know, the futures. And I think that's something that's really beneficial, you know, including futures thinking, you know, whether it's a really small crash course for high school students or even younger, or a whole actual class. So I think that's something that I think I would be really excited to see in some form in any of the schools, you know, out there. There's something that's already happening, you know, collaboration from Teach the Future or the Future School or any other institution that's out there. I think it'll be really fascinating to see how that, you know, works out, how that plays out, or how do students really enjoy that. What do you guys think about that?
Hopefully I don't. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go.
I hope I don't get cut off again. I'm sorry, guys. I keep getting dropped every time I make a comment. I guess my comments are not working out. I just wanted to add something, sort of a futurist dimension on what you were just saying, Victor, is part of the freedom, I think, of being able to pick something different to study, to follow your passion, to figure out what it is that you enjoy, right? And find your path in life is one of those things that, at least in the US, has been very limited by people's economic situation. So I would just add to that the possibility of something like universal basic income to form a better foundation so that people can feel that they can pursue something that interests them, that they can see themselves doing their whole life, or studying for years in college or whatever it might be. The idea of some sort of basic universal wage so that people can financially support themselves while they study and prepare for a career that they'll enjoy could probably make a big difference.
Did you have something to say, Marisa?
Sure, I'm just blown away by your comment now. And coming back to, the disparities that we face in our education system, I'm very mindful that, like I said, even the educators don't have, as much access or resources as what they need to create those, systems of, equity or accessibility, even as the professionals running the spaces. And so I'm just, as you spoke now around creating, access and equity, I'm really mindful of our current context of COVID and how, it's such a VUCA state, where it speaks around the volatility, the uncertainty, the complexity and ambiguity of our current state. Having to, whether it's lockdown or no lockdown, we're in class, we're not in class. And just how that currently, like going through this current state, is also changing us as people, not just for the future, but now, and how. And I think what's coming to mind right now is the mental health around it, and how are we, Victor, you said around, the creativity and innovation, and how do we assist learners and youth currently in this VUCA state of the uncertainty and ambiguity with COVID, and how do we engage them where, like you were saying, Nadia, that they don't feel like they have a future, or that the planet's not going to be around for however many years. So how do we still tap into their creativity and their, the mindset around being human-centric, being collaborative, tolerating ambiguity, but remaining optimistic and curious, in a driven way, and not necessarily just becoming, giving up or stepping down, or like Victor, you said, like, I didn't even know what I wanted to do. So how do we create those opportunities? We currently the system or the mindset for young learners and for youth is, there is no hope, there is no way, considering mental health challenges and just the complexities that have come with COVID.
Yeah, talking about the mindset, the mental health, I think that's also really important to consider, especially since they're, the young people with a young perspective and not aware of all the, I think you can say, the bad things that's out there in the world. But if they are aware of the bad things in the world, then that's something that someone should, tread carefully into this, into their education. To be aware that they can influence these people, early on, early on into their whole life or even their whole career. Because this is the point where they decide, do I want to go to a community college, to a whole huge public school, a private school? Should I go out of state, in state, or even just go into a technical school? Or even the entrepreneur route, like what? There's so many possibilities, there's so many routes, and being that person that can guide them, with a positive mindset. You know, anything can happen. I think that's really beneficial for both parties, you know, helping them think that the future is positive and for them to realize that they can choose whatever path that they can go on.
Can I chime in a little
bit? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I would like to say that, you know, I think like the times that I have sort of, you know, tried to teach critical design of any kind of sort of a design that involves speculation and foresight. So what I've understood is that that in India particularly, we have this culture of calling the teacher by using a thing called sir at the front of their name. So I would not be Dhruv, I would be Sir Dhruv. And that is a very stupid colonial hang-up for what it is. And this is a problem that is larger than, you know, you would believe it to be. So for the first year in the design school, we actually, it was a new school, and we had a very difficult time of asking the students to call us by our first names. And that sort of decentered us a lot. So I think in every context, I think whenever a critical discussion is about to happen with the student group, we do some sort of precursor sessions where we sort of try to, you know, decenter ourselves, where we become not the teachers, but sort of facilitators of this discussion. The discussion is still theirs. We are just there to sort of, you know, guide them. So I think I am considering a lot of targeted, strategic, decolonized toolkits in my education, where I think the actual problem lies. I think in most third world contexts. I don't know. I think I can use some reflection on this. Yeah.
That's super interesting. I think that's super interesting. And I'm sure that actually in every country, there is some way of still having like this past of how we look at teachers, etc. But what I also, sorry, there's like a big truck going by. What I also wanted to say when previously was talked about it, is that I think what we're currently a little bit lacking in the educational system is also like the flexibility of curriculum, because a lot of the times when we think about educating people, etc., there's also like a system around it, and oftentimes there's so much time spent around what you will teach and when you will teach and how. And then when there's some kind of a disruption or something happens, then the educational system and the teachers are not ready. So it's like you teach these teachers and they graduate universities and they go to schools. And by the time they go to the schools, then the students are in many ways already smarter than you are. And you have to like somehow adjust to it. And a lot of teachers try to do it, but they can't, because then they have this like scripted curriculum that is like, you're supposed to teach this, you're supposed to do that, because we have this grading system. And if they're not going to do what is asked from them and understand these concepts and these methodologies and this information, then they're not going to pass. So it's kind of like you lose this flexibility of how much you can actually learn and what you can learn at a specific like program or educational institution. I feel like that's like we could move so much more faster if we would figure out a way how we could make it more flexible and give this flexibility into it.
There's a really interesting book of like essays and speeches, maybe some articles, all written by Margaret Mead, that's been compiled into a book that's called, I think it's called, An Anthropologist Looks Into the Future. The World Ahead is what it's called. And it's part of a series of compilations that was edited by an anthropologist who kind of dabbles in futurology, I guess you would say, Robert Texter. Anyway, one of these speeches from Margaret Mead was a really interesting one that she gave like in the early 60s. And it was titled, I think this is the title, we should encourage dropouts. And it was the idea that she was speaking at a college graduation, but she was talking about how we should actually encourage people to drop in and out of school their entire lives. Like, it shouldn't be scheduled and prescribed, that we should just encourage dropouts, right? We think we want to prevent dropouts, but actually we should let people come learn when they want to learn, and when they feel that they've learned enough for now that they can leave, and then they can come back whenever they want. And I think that she was really ahead of her time in saying that in the early 1960s, because I feel like that's kind of what people are starting to look at education as, a lifelong, ongoing, you know, something you never get too old to do. It's not just limited to your youth anymore.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there was also, I think Stanford University was the one. Was my mic off or on? I had some kind of a glitch.
I think you were off. I think it was on, but we couldn't hear you.
Okay. What was the last thing I said?
Something about Stanford.
Yes. So yes, they were playing around with the concept of subscription-based education, so that you can jump in and out of education based on your need. Doesn't matter how old you are, like if you need to suddenly like upskill or reskill, or you want to purchase something new, then you can just, you know, go and study for a year and then maybe go and study for 2 years and then have a break and et cetera. So I thought it was really like an interesting concept.
Yeah, just to jump on there as well, I love what you said around the lifelong learning and jumping in and out. And that's, you know, some of the top skills that we need is, you know, besides the active learning and different learning strategies, is the ability to, you know, be creative and initiating originality. And that includes the way we engage with our own education, and are we lifelong learners? And as we spoke about, you know, the educators, the teachers themselves, and as Sir Dhruv said, like, are those educators lifelong learners? Are we showing them passionate ways to engage with their own learning, to engage with curriculum, to engage with their edu-mentors, their coaches, their facilitators? And so I'm really excited about being able to create those learning skills and critical thinking skills around your own education and around engaging with it in a group setting, in a classroom setting. How does that look for a futurist, for the future of work, or skills that we need for careers that we don't even, you know, yet know?
I just wanted to comment a little on what you were saying about teachers, and say how going forward, I think that, you know, we were already facing a teacher shortage prior to the pandemic, like on a global level. And a lot of people have left the teaching profession. At least I know in the US, retirement went way up. You know, teachers of a certain age were like, you know, forget this, I'm leaving. And then young people are not going into teaching as they were. It doesn't pay well. So I think that's a major deal that has not been explored fully. Like, what really is the teaching profession like going forward? And how do we ensure that people want to enter it? And furthermore, that we can keep them in it, you know, because part of the problem is retention. People don't, you know, enjoy teaching after a certain amount of time. So that may be a bit beyond youth education, but, you know, globally, I think it is an issue.
Well, I do hope that it changes a lot more, that it suits people's, I guess, creativity. I think that's the most important thing that's going to be happening more, since we're going to be seeing more applications of AI, you know, overtaking some jobs, you know, slowly but surely. And so the creativity part of how can we use AI in a different way, in a way that we haven't even considered before, I think that's a lot more important, and a way to, I guess, you know, showcase students, like, there's so many ways that AI can be used, but we don't know how to do it, you know. Maybe these students can have that kind of exploration.
Hi. So what I would like to add is, like, excellent point in how this current generation, when they'll have, like, access to a much more mature version of, you know, the technology that we are seeing today, and how would they deal with it, and how would they... But something that I've understood is that, you know, I always read this one person, John Maida. I think that is something America really offered greatly in the field of, you know, digital futures and how we look at new media in itself. So what I've been understanding is that the use cases that I see coming from students now are much more meaningful than what I used to come up with in my time in the product design school. Till then, it was more about products on the table, products in our reality. But students right now are actually looking into, like, they're leveraging the places that they are coming from. If someone is coming from a minority background, then they are using that sort of background in their field of study or in the projects that they undertake. And that is something very wonderful to see. That's something I think is a quality unique to Gen Z, where they're able to, you know, combine their activism and their profession in a very seamless way. I think that is very interesting. Yeah.
Really great points about Gen Z, Drew. That's super interesting to hear that observation kind of echoed my same observation. And with that said, I wanted to let you guys know I have to leave the room, but it's been really nice chatting with you. And I hope to see you all on Twitter soon. Thank you.
No worries. I think this is the perfect time. If there's anything that you guys want to say, some last words or any closing remarks, go right ahead.
From me, yeah, just great having this discussion. Thank you, Victor, for arranging it. Thank you for everyone's engagement. I'm really looking forward to more Twitter spaces with you all, and just more engagement in terms of what the future of youth education and futures thinking around, you know, the top skills and jobs that we can work towards is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also wanted to say thank you for organizing this and having this. And I just had this idea of that, we talk so much about the Gen Z, and I think there should be a room with really like these like young Gen Zers having really a discussion about it. I know there's like a space on Clubhouse as well. I think there's like a whole group of people, Gen Zers, who are discussing really like all kinds of issues and topics. But it would be nice to really have like a proper discussion on it, what they think of the education on it. So this was really a nice talk. So thank you all.
With that, you guys have a nice day or evening or night, wherever you guys are. And hopefully we can see and talk with each other again. Bye.